heard this story about this newly married couple just gotten back from the honeymoon. They'd been back long enough just for the realities of life to begin to really set in on their marriage. And one morning she did something that really irritated him. And he said, "I can't understand how God could have made you so beautiful and so dumb at the same time." Well, she didn't say anything and was kind of startled by it all. And they were having dinner that night. The whole day had gone by. She said, "Sweetheart, I've been giving some thought to the question that you asked this morning." And she said, "I think I have an answer." He said, "What question's that?" He'd forgotten all about it. "Well, you know, why God made me so beautiful and so dumb at the same time." Oh, yeah. "Well, what do you think?" She said, "Well, the reason God made me so beautiful is so you would marry me." "Yeah, and the reason he made me so dumb is so I would marry you." And that's terrible, isn't it? Oh, wow. Isn't that awful? There's one thing that I neglected to mention when I talked about the introvert-extrovert thing that I think I need to share with you. Just take a second here. That may be of some help to you because it was of tremendous help to both of us. It's been 4 or 5 years ago that we came across a different definition for those two terms that really gave some insight for us into our own personalities. An introvert is someone who draws strength and power from aloneness, from inside, from quietness. Whereas an extrovert is someone who draws strength and power from externals, from outside activities. And a lot of that has to do with people. Now, we here in America, in our culture, prize far more highly than we probably ought to the extrovert personality, that outgoing, aggressive, talkative, sort of dominating type of individual, which is what we think of when we think of the extrovert. However, it's interesting that we were talking with a counselor, professional counselor recently, and he made the statement that he feels there are many, many closet introverts in our society today who pull off the act of being an extrovert simply because our society calls for it in order to be successful in many kinds of responsibilities and job opportunities. It's an interesting thought, and maybe, you know, that can be of help to you. But I think we too often think of the introvert personality in a negative way. And there have been times when I have thought of myself in that way. But these two definitions really have helped us see what is the predominant characteristic in the extrovert-introvert. And it's not necessarily the externals. It's more the internal thing, where we draw our strength and power from internally. And with the extrovert, it is the external things that affect that. With the introvert, it's more the internal, the quietness, the aloneness. Now, Carol and I have learned some things about ourselves in this area. For instance, part of that is reflected in the fact that Carol has a greater capacity for people than I do. She's the extrovert, I'm the introvert. It isn't that I can't intermingle, interact with people, am not talkative at times when I'm in certain kinds of situations with other people. But she can go at it longer and harder than I can. I reach a filled up point. I get on overload, as she was talking about. And so that's when I get to that kind of a point and it's a marriage ceremony that we're going to, a wedding that we're going to, it's when I say, "Hey, honey, could we forget the reception? Because I've had it up to here with people. I don't have any more capacity. Well, then usually we'll compromise on something like that. And she'll say, well, let's go for 15 or 20 minutes. And I'll say, okay, well, the 15 or 20 minutes come and go, and I've had it, and so, you know, what do you do? Well, I'll walk over and take her by the elbow, and I'll say, honey, I'll wait for you in the car. And she knows exactly what's wrong, or what has happened. I mean, not what's wrong, but what has happened. And because we have an understanding on that, and we understand one another, it's okay with her, and it's okay with me. So I go out and get in the car and sit there and kind of put my head back and, you know. But she's enjoying herself in there. Compromise, huh? Working through an issue that... So that has really helped us. And the interesting thing about it is that over the years, since we've come in touch with that definition, over the years, we have seen each other draw closer to each other in that area. In other words, I have probably picked up some extrovertish tendencies from Carol, and she has picked up some introvertish tendencies from me, because more and more now, Carol needs time alone. She needs it, and she wants to withdraw and spend some time just by herself quietly. And I find myself feeling more and more comfortable in people-type situations than years ago. So, you know, I think that's part of the adventure of marriage. But anyway, I wanted to mention that to you because it has meant something significant in our own relationship just within the last few years. Ephesians chapter 5. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to spend an hour with the husbands and the first session tomorrow, and then Carol will spend an hour with the wives in the second session. But this morning, I want to get a head start on tomorrow morning. I want to take the next hour, hopefully a little bit less, because I know you're getting kind of weary, and talk just to the husbands. Now, you wives, I think you'll want to stay and listen in, but if you'd like to leave, you're welcome to, although you're really going to miss something significant, I tell you that. This passage in Ephesians chapter 5, beginning with verse 22, is probably without a doubt the most significant section in the New Testament on the subject of marriage. Now, there are many, many passages in the Scripture, both Old and New Testament, that relate themselves to issues that arise in any interpersonal relationship, and especially marriage. If we limit ourselves in the application of the Scripture to our marriage, just with those passages that deal with marriage, we are leaving out so much that God has to say to us about our marriage relationship that it's inconceivable that we would do that. But I think it's worth mentioning. But this is one of those significant passages that deal with the marriage issue. And the interesting thing to me is where it is found in the book of Ephesians, in the total scope of what Paul is really trying to say to us in the overall book of Ephesians. A little brief outline of the book of Ephesians would be the first three chapters deals with the wealth that we have as believers, W-E-A-L-T-H, because the first three chapters are quite deep theologically. It deals with eternity past all the way up to the present. It deals with what Christ has done for us, why we are in Him, and what the significance of that is to us as believers. The key phrase in those three chapters is the little phrase in Him or in Christ, or synonyms for that. And so those first three chapters deal with all that God has done for us as believers. So it's the wealth that we have in Christ. The next 2.5 chapters, 4, 5, and 6 down through verse 9, talk about the walk of the believer, how we are to take these deep theological truths and put them into practice every day in our lives in shoe leather. And then the last two-thirds of chapter 6 deals with the warfare. So it's the wealth, the walk, and the warfare. Now, there is no relationship between the warfare and this passage on marriage. I want to assure you of that. Well, there may be a little relationship, but not the kind you might think. So this passage that we're going to look at in just a second on the marriage relationship is right in that section that is practical. See, he goes from Theology to the practical to the warfare, which is also a practical aspect, but it's a whole different thing that he's talking about in 4, 5, and 6, 1 to 9. So what we're going to read here is not theory. It's not theology. It has some theology in it. But it's to be very, very practical. This is something we are to take and figure out how to put into shoe leather, how to walk around in it every day. The admonitions and the commands that we are given here in Ephesians 5, 22 to 33. Now, just one quick word, but Carol is going to expand on this tomorrow. The first verse there, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. And then also 24, now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Carol's going to deal with that particular subject, the whole issue of submission, tomorrow morning when she's with you gals, and explain it more fully. But let me just make a comment or two about it. Verse 21 is not really attached to the section on marriage. There is a break there. It is, verse 21 is almost a summary of many of the things that Paul has been saying in chapter 4 and chapter 5. It's a very practical thing, and he kind of summarizes all that, and he says, all right, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. That's kind of what I've been trying to talk about here in chapter 4 and chapter 5. There are certain times when all of us as Christians, in one situation or another, when we need to submit to the other person. Now, that includes husbands and wives. See, verse 21 is all inclusive. 22 and 24 is talking specifically about wives. But what it is saying to us husbands is that there are certain kinds of situations in which we will find ourselves as a Christian husband when we are to take the humble place, where we are to be the one in submission. Well, then we got to come up with a definition of submission, huh? We really do now, don't we, huh? Yeah. And maybe put out of our minds some of these weird things that we have heard or thought, and Carol is going to deal with that in the morning. What do we really mean by submission? See, there is a sense in which submission is the lifestyle of a Christian. Or it should be. Because all through the New Testament, we read about the issue of our submission to Christ. Our submission to Christ. And it's said here, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. See, it compares it as to the Lord. And of course, when we get into the husband's thing, we're going to see that's the same thing. It's just as Christ. He is our example. Okay, so let's begin with verse 25. And from here on, I'm speaking primarily just to husbands. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. That is in the imperative in the Greek language, which means it's a command. There are no options. There are no if clauses. It is a command to us husbands to love our wives. We don't have any other option if we're going to be in obedience to the Lord. Okay, let's go on. Verse 26. To make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. There it is a second time. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. So three times in this passage, we husbands are commanded to love our wives. And in that first passage, in verse 23, it's husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. That is the only passage in the New Testament that I know of where one specific person, a husband, is commanded to love one other specific person, his wife, as Christ loved the church. Now, there are several places in the New Testament where we as believers are commanded to love one another, just sort of in general, in the same way that Christ loves us. But this is the only place where it's a one-on-one situation, as Christ loved the church. And I don't know what that says to you husbands, but boy, I tell you, it puts some fear into my backbone in terms of obedience to that. I think it's going to take me the rest of my life to learn how to do that. To love Carol as Christ loved the church. And to learn how to put that into practice every day, because Christ's love to me is demonstrated every day in one way or another. And of course, the question that comes in our minds is, well, how did Christ love the church? What is it that I'm supposed to emulate as a husband in that respect? Well, there's probably a number of things that we could talk about in that arena, but to me it boils down to one primary issue as to how Christ showed his love to the church. And it's expressed probably best and most succinctly by the old Apostle John when he was just about probably on his deathbed, and he wrote his epistle, the first epistle of John, chapter 3, verse 18. And he says, "My little children, let us not love just in speech and in tongue, but in deed and in truth." And that is the way God expresses his love toward us. I don't know whether you've ever stopped to think about that or not. But God never stops by just telling us that he loves us. He always attaches action to it. He always expresses his love to us in terms of what he does for us. His deeds. John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he" what? Gave. It's an action verb. He gave his only begotten Son. Romans 5:8, "But God commended" or extended his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He did something about his love. And everywhere you find God's love expressed toward man, Christ's love expressed toward his church in the scriptures, you find it couched in terms of actions. He always does something about his love. Now, what does that say to me as a husband? If I'm going to have Christ as my example in the expression of my love to my wife, I got to put shoe leather to it. I got to do something about it. Love is not just words. It's actions. It's got to be expressed in terms of deeds. And guys, that takes work. That takes creativity. That takes ingenuity. That takes thought. That takes commitment. That takes time. I am convinced, I'm making up a statistic here, but I am convinced that if we husbands, most of us have the kind of a job that we got to do some thinking at. It requires a little bit of ingenuity, a little bit of thought, a little bit of creativity, a little bit of initiative. I am convinced that if we as husbands devoted 5% of that creative, imaginative, initiative kind of energy to our marriage as we do to our jobs, it would revolutionize some of our marriages. Because some of us have dropped out in terms of thinking about it. And someone has said, "Think, there is so little competition." So we have a tremendous responsibility here. A book that makes a statement about this is, it says, "Love is essential to both husband and wife. To be admired is essential to both husbands and wives. But to be loved is more important to a woman, and to be admired is vital to a man. There is something about the makeup of a woman that she needs to have it communicated to her repeatedly, over and over and over again, that she's loved. In various kinds of ways, this needs to be filtered into her makeup in order for her to feel secure." Now, once in a while, gals, it would help me if you kind of nod like this. I want to make sure that I'm on track here. That's why I want you here for this. You encourage me. Now, from time to time, I'll get talking to a husband, and he'll make some statement like this. I just don't love her anymore, Jack. I've lost my love for my wife. It's a tragic thing to have happen. And we'll talk about it. And then eventually I'll get around to asking this question. When was the last time you did something loving for your wife? Not said anything, because he probably hasn't said anything for a long, long time. But when was the last time you did something that was a loving act for her? And usually he'll stop and think. And he said, well, boy, I can't even remember the last time. See, we are commanded to love our wives. If we are Christians and we are married, we don't have an option, gentlemen. We are commanded to love our wives. And so to come up with one like that, that's kind of off the left field fence, I don't love her anymore, is not adequate from God's point of view. See, we don't feel our way into acting. We act our way into feeling. And usually what that guy means is, I don't feel like I love her anymore. The feelings of love have gone. That's why I ask him, when was the last time you did an act of love? Did something nice for her, just to say, hey, honey, I care. I'm concerned. I love you. So you don't feel your way into acting loving. You act your way into feeling loving. You do an act of love, and the feelings come trailing along. 3 or 4 years ago, I was pulling out of the office over here, heading home. We live over on the east side of town. It was a Friday afternoon. It had been a disastrous week. One of those weeks that nothing had gone right, nothing had been resolved, no decisions had been made, everything was still hanging up in the air, and I hate it when it happens. And I had a pretty lousy attitude toward the whole week, what we refer to in our home as a DRA, a dirty, rotten attitude. And Carol and I were going to have the whole weekend together at home, which is kind of unusual, just by ourselves, the two of us. And man, I was really looking forward to it. But I knew that if I went home with this dirty, rotten attitude that I had, it would probably not only put a damper on Friday night, but also wreck the whole weekend for us. It had the potential of doing it. That's how bad a mood I was in. And so as I climbed in the car and pulled out of the parking lot, I tried to begin to crank up a different spirit within me. Ever try to do that? Work? No. Didn't work for me either. It just didn't come. Well, I had the good sense to pray. And so I just kind of shot up a word to the Lord and said, Lord, help me with this. I don't know what to do, and I don't want to go home feeling like this. I heard about a guy who that happened to once in a while, and there was a big, tall telephone pole right on the corner of his block just before he pulled into his home. And so when he would go home and he had a DRA, he would take the DRA and all those problems and everything that he was wrestling with in his mind, and mentally he would hang them on that telephone pole. And then the next morning when he went back to the office, he'd take them off and take it. Now, that won't work for me. I've tried that. That telephone pole bit just doesn't work. So I prayed. By the way, the scripture says, casting all your care upon him, not upon the telephone pole. And he, because he cares for you. And I think that has a better chance of working. Well, within just a few seconds after I asked the Lord for some help on this, I got an idea. And man, I know that idea, as I look back on it now, came right straight from heaven's portals. And here was the idea. Stop at the Hallmark shop over at the Mall of the Bluffs and get Carol a little gift. Now, this was early November. Our anniversary is in September. Her birthday is in July. Christmas was way off in the distance. So there was no occasion for me to do something like this. And ordinarily, I wouldn't think of doing something like that. I'm not that creative. But God is. And so, boy, I thought that was a terrific idea. And I plowed ahead and got over to the Mall of the Bluffs, which was only about 5 minutes from our house, pulled in the parking lot, got out of the car, walked into the Hallmark store, and by the time I got in the store, my inner self began to pick up. The mood began to change. I could sense it. And so I looked around, and I didn't want to spend a lot of money. And so I looked around, and I took 10 or 15 minutes kind of browsing the whole store. And I finally found what I knew was just the right thing. It was three red candles, about 2.5 to 3 inches in diameter each a different height, with a little piece of green deal fringe around it. It was a centerpiece for a table for Christmas. And I knew Carol would love it. She really goes for stuff like that. Well, I was excited by this time. I had them gift wrap it. I got a little card to go with it and climbed back into the car. And by the time I pulled in the garage, ready to walk in the house and give her this, my DRA was gone. See, you don't feel your way into acting loving. You act your way into feeling loving. And that's exactly what had happened to me. I had done an act of love, and the feelings inwardly began to change from lousy attitude to a loving attitude. By the time I had climbed back in the car to head home at the Mall of the Bluffs, I could hardly wait to get home. I was so excited about it. And giving this little gift to Carol and knowing what her reaction would be, and spending the evening together and then the whole weekend. We had a delightful weekend. I challenge you to try that the next time you begin to feel unloving, or if you allow thoughts to begin to penetrate your mind, I don't love her anymore. Listen, guys, we can't do that, because it's commanded by the Scriptures from God's lips themselves. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. But I challenge you, if that fleeting thought first enters your mind, do something loving. Your whole inner self will begin to change. Now, how can we, as husbands, on a regular basis, communicate in a practical way to our wives that we love them? How can we do that? I want to suggest three ways. That every day, as a husband, I aim to do these three things. Every day. Now, guys, I've been practicing this for years, and I'll guarantee you it works. But it also is work. It takes a little work to do this. Now, the first one is pretty easy, and you can probably guess what it is, huh? Just say those three little words that leave her dancing on air and gasping for breath. Go hang yourself. No. I love you. As I mentioned before, there is something about the makeup of a woman that she needs to hear this. I heard about one guy who was getting a little weary of his wife nagging him about this. And, I'm not sure that's right either. But he just never said it. And she was kind of, honey, please tell me once in a while. So finally he went down into his little shop down the basement. He had a little woodworking shop down there. And he got a nice piece of oak and cut it just the right size and took a wood-burning tool and burned in there, I love you, and then fixed it up real nice, painted it, put a hook on the back of it, took it upstairs, hung it on the wall over the kitchen sink. Then went and got his wife, brought her into the kitchen and said, now there, does that do it? Well, no. Not really. I mean, it was a nice gesture, a nice thought, but no, that doesn't do it. Just to say those words, I love you. Now, it's almost noon. How many of you guys this morning, today, have already told your wife that you love? You said, honey, I love you. How many of you have done that? Let me see your hands. Boy, put them up. I mean, if you've done it, man, you shouldn't be ashamed of it. Okay, that's terrific. That's terrific. Now, I'm going to give the rest of you an opportunity right now to do that. So we're going to take just a little break right here. I want you to put your arm around her and just say it, okay? Go ahead. And if you guys have already done it, you can do it again. Now watch it. Be careful. Hey. Now that didn't hurt, did it? You guys like that? Okay, just want to make sure I'm heading down the right track here. Well, of course, words are cheap. Now we got to get serious. So here's the second one. Doing something nice for her. Every day I aim to tell her I love her, and secondly to do something nice for her. Now this gets harder. I mean, this is where the imagination and the creativity and the thought comes in. To do something nice for her every day. Yeah. A week ago last weekend, we were down in Texas at a little church down there in Greenville, Texas. And after one of the sessions, I don't think we were even talking about this particular subject, but after one of the sessions, we were walking out to coffee break, and a couple kind of got in stride with us. And she said, "Let me tell you something about my husband. We were married on, I think it was April the 20th, that she said, 16 years ago. She said, on the 20th of every month since then, he has given me a little gift. I said, "You're kidding." She says, "No." She says, I don't know how he does it, but he has never missed 1/20th of the month in 16 years. She says, "It's not usually a big deal. It's just a little thing that I appreciate and he knows I'll appreciate." But she says, "Boy, I love him for it." That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, guys. Just, I mean, how neat, huh? And what does that say to her? "I love you. I care." It's putting action to our words. I heard about another doozy. We were down at another place, and we were sitting around after we'd had a marriage seminar with a group of couples in a living room in one of the homes. And one of the wives told this one, this just blows my mind. But it just shows you the creative genius that we have in husbands. I mean, it's there, man. We just got to draw it out, that latent potential that is there. This guy and his son went together on this. His young boy, he was only 10 or 12 years old. And they went down to the drugstore and they got a prescription bottle. And then they got 52 empty prescription capsules. You know, the kind of things they put medicine in and they put them together. They brought those home, and then they got little tiny slips of paper, and they wrote out 52 different things that the wife or mom could do during the next year, one each week. Like, you know, the family will take you out to dinner at her favorite restaurant. And they came up with 52 different ideas. And then they'd roll that little piece of paper up and put it in one of those capsules, and then they'd dump it in the bottle, and they did that with 52 of these capsules. And then right on top, the one that they knew, this was just before Christmas, and the one that they knew that she would pick up first, because they put this under the Christmas tree, it had in it, "Go down and pick out a pair of cowboy boots," because they knew that that's what she wanted for Christmas, a new pair of cowboy boots. And they wanted her to pick just what she wanted. And then every Sunday, she would open a new capsule all year long. Boy, you talk about ingenuity, huh? Fantastic. Now, that's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it? It is to me. let me give you something a little more down-to-earth, okay? How many of you guys have a honey-do list? You know, "Honey, would you please do this?" Or, "Honey, would you please do that?" Yeah, I've got one, too. I think right now I'm pretty well all caught up on that. But I have learned some things over the years of how much that means to Carol. And I also have learned that when I neglect some of those things, that it communicates something different than what I really want to communicate, that I don't care. But when I take care of them and kind of, because things around the house that go wrong. Carol is absolutely not gifted in the area of mechanics and electronics and all that. Neither am I, really, but I have a knack for taking things apart, putting it back together, and it works for some reason. I don't know why, but it does very often. Not anything complicated like a computer or something like that, but you know, something simple. I can remember one time, this happened probably 2 or 3 years ago, in our bedroom, we've got two windows that are very narrow and tall, kind of like these. They're not that big, but you know, a scaled down model. And they're right next to one another with about a foot of wall in between them. And when we were first moved into the house, we were trying to figure out how do you cover those. They're kind of dumb shaped. And so we finally got drapes that you pull up and it kind of folds up, you know, and then you wrap the cord around a hook and it stays up and then you let it down. It kind of unfolds. Well, one of the hooks on one of those windows had kind of come loose from the wall, and it was still just attached by a couple of threads on the screw, and she had asked me several times to fix that, because I'm usually up in the morning before she is, and so she gets up, and she's the one who pulls that up, and I very seldom had ever used it. So I had neglected it, and several months probably had gone by, and she'd asked me several times to take care of that, and I just hadn't. Then one Saturday morning, she got up before I did, was gone off doing something, and I leisurely got up that Saturday morning, was putzing around in my pajamas, and finally I got around to pulling up this curtain, and I tried to wrap it around the hook, and it was almost an impossible feat with only two hands. You almost needed a third hand to do it, because you kind of had to hold that thing in and then get the cord around it. Well, I stood back and looked at that and figured out exactly what I would need to fix it. I tromped down the basement, still in my pajamas. I got what I needed, came back upstairs, fixed it. You know, all I needed was a hammer and a screwdriver and one of these little plastic plugs you pound in the wall for a screw to go in. Just the right size. I fixed it, took the stuff back down the basement, went on about the day, thought nothing more about it. Well, Sunday morning, the next morning, rolled around, and I was up early and sitting downstairs in the family room reading my Bible and having a cup of coffee, and pretty soon I heard Carol get up, and our bedroom floor squeaks, and it's right above the family room, and so I knew she was up, and several minutes went by, and then all of a sudden, I heard this shriek from upstairs. You fixed it! I could hear it all the way down the family room. She came running downstairs and grabbed me and threw her arms around me and gave me a hug and a kiss. And we sat there on the couch and smooched for a while. I think I'd been missing that all those months. Not really, not really. But I learned something from that. Huh? Those little things mean something to her. And when I do them, what it says to her is I care. I love you. So guys, the honey-do list is important to her. It may not seem important to you, but it is to her. It says, I love you. An act of love. I want you guys to think right now about something your wife enjoys doing that you couldn't care less about doing. But you know she likes to do it, and you know, it may not be that extreme. You couldn't care less, but you could take it or leave it. I mean, if it never happened within the next 10 years, if you didn't get involved, you know, you'd never miss it. You got something like that? Okay? Well, with me, it's window shopping. I immensely dislike window shopping. I won't go so far as to say I hate it, but it borders on that. Because Carol's approach to buying something and my approach to buying something is entirely different. See, I use, like we said yesterday morning, I use Consumer's Report, the Yellow Pages, and the telephone. Basically, that is my approach 90% of the time. But not Carol. I mean, she has to see it and feel it and look at it in daylight and artificial light and you know, and look at it in every store that has it in town. Not wrong, just different, huh? So she enjoys window shopping. She enjoys from time to time going down to the Citadel, which was one of these indoor shopping centers over on our side of town. It's only about a 10-minute drive from our house. And just walking around and looking. Not necessarily with the intent of buying anything, but just looking. So from time to time, we'll have an evening free. I'll say to Carol, hey, let's go down to the Citadel. Just walk around and look. Okay, so we climb in the car, we drive down. And we'll walk around and look in the windows and stop at the pet store and look at the dogs and the cats and the rabbits, you know, and stop in the books, you know, the Walden bookstore there and see what the latest is, and stop in Walgreens and have a Coke. Very seldom ever buy anything, but we just have a great time together. I enjoy being with her. I don't particularly enjoy window shopping, but I know she does. Give it some thought, huh? Doing something nice for her. Doesn't have to be a big deal. But every day my aim is to do something nice for her. Just to say, honey, I love you. I care. Now, once in a while we need to come up with something ingenious, like the prescription bottle or something like that. I remember one time, we got till 12:15. No way, okay. I remember one time I had accepted a speaking engagement on Carol's birthday. It was a Sunday. Months before, and when I wrote it in my date book, it just slipped by me. I just did not, it didn't register that July 25 was that day and that was her birthday. And so when time began to get close and I realized what I'd done, I really apologized to her because we keep things like that pretty close to ourselves. We enjoy anniversaries and birthdays and things like that, and we celebrate them together. So I wanted to do something a little extra, other than just a gift and a card, which I had gotten. But I scratched my brain. I was really trying to come up with something ingenious, and I just couldn't. My creative juices were gone. And it came right down to the day that I was supposed to leave. And I'd gotten up real early on Saturday morning to do a little preparation for the trip and messages and so forth. And finally got around to shaving, and I was standing there looking in the mirror, and I glanced down at the counter, and there was Carol's eyebrow pencil there. And I picked it up. I got an idea. I picked it up, and I scribbled on the mirror, and then I took a piece of Kleenex to see if it'd come off easy, and it did. And so after I'd finished everything, I wrote on the mirror, "Happy birthday, I love you," with her eyebrow pencil. And I stood back and I looked at that and I thought, man, that is really clever. So I picked up a little soap dish that we have sitting there on the counter, and on the formica top I wrote, "Happy birthday, I love you," with the eyebrow pencil, and set the soap dish down on top of it, knowing that sometime during the weekend she would move that and find it. Well, then I really got carried away, all over the house. I mean, on the glass shower door, downstairs, on the TV, two or three places in the kitchen, on the oven door, which is glass, you know, "Happy birthday, I love you." Well, Carol got up, believe this or not, she got up and took me to the airport that morning and didn't see any of those. I mean, she's kind of blurry-eyed when she first gets up, like most of us are, and you know, I drove to the airport and she took me, and I got home on Monday afternoon from that trip. And she picked me up at the airport. She didn't say anything about the gift. She didn't say anything about the card until later. But she raved about the "Happy birthday, I love you" all over the house. I mean, and it didn't cost me a cent. Boy, we need to use our creative juices, guys, to do little things that say to her, "I love you." Okay, thirdly, I'm getting carried away here. Number one, tell her I love her. Number two, do something nice for her. And thirdly, pay her a compliment. Every day I aim to pay her a compliment. "Honey, you look great. You know, you're a beautiful woman. Your hair is terrific. Boy, that was a great meal. Wow, you've done a terrific job on the house today. It looks terrific. Wow, what'd you do to your eyebrows? Man, they look new." That's new, huh? I mean, the moral of this one is, if you like it, say so. Don't see something you like and not comment on it. You're passing up a terrific opportunity to communicate something to your wife that you care, that you're interested, that you've observed. Read a story written by a pastor in a local newspaper column. He said, "Family life holds together on the thin thread of praise and commendation. Unhappily, we have a way of withholding expressions of appreciation and gratitude for those nearest to us." Isn't that true? Huh? Yeah. In Vermont, so the story runs, a tight-lipped husband finally said to his wife, "When I think of how much you have meant to me all these years, it is almost more than I can do sometimes to keep from telling you so." Oh, wow. And he goes on. He says, "One of the deep regrets of Thomas Carlyle, well-known author of both poetry and prose, one of the deep regrets of Thomas Carlyle was his failure to tell his wife Jane how much he loved her and appreciated her constant loyalty and encouragement. After her death, he wrote, in self-reproach, these words, 'What silences we keep year after year with those who are near to us and dear, till out of sight and out of reach they go, these dear, familiar friends who loved us so. We think with vain regret of some that once we might have said, and they have heard.' But of course, then it was too late." We need to work on that. If we like it, say so. To speak up, to pay her a compliment every day. Gentlemen, let me ask you a question. Are you fun to live with? Do you make life exciting around your house? Have you taken the responsibility as the head of the home, which we'll be talking about tomorrow morning, to set the tone and the atmosphere of your home? And is it one of excitement, of a little bit of mystery thrown in once in a while, of joy, of cheerfulness? Or is it sort of just the opposite? You know, when you get home from work, boy, the kids kind of scatter. The dog runs out on the back porch. Your wife stands there at the stove stirring the soup, waiting to see which way the wind is really blowing before she says anything. Now, this is a tremendous responsibility we have as husbands, I feel. To develop what one person calls the habit of happiness. In a little book called Building a Successful Marriage, one of the most important characteristics of a marriageable person is the habit of happiness. It would be impossible to overestimate the value of cultivating this trait in oneself and of seeking it in a marriage partner. The habit of happiness. And I like what he says, the value of cultivating this trait. The implication of that is we can learn to be that way if we're not. We can learn to be cheerful. We can learn to set a tone that provides happiness. Oh, I realize there's going to be tough days and there are going to be hard things that happen and it's going to be anything but cheerful and happy around the place. But I'm talking about overall, the tone that we set by our attitudes and expressing loving and kind acts to our wives and to our families and by setting the tone in our home through that. Proverbs 17:22 says, "A cheerful heart is a good medicine, but a downcast spirit dries up the bones." That's the Bible's way of putting the same concept, a cheerful heart. It's a good medicine to all around us. Do you have a cheerful heart? God can help you in that area. If you have a hard time with that one, and some of us have a harder time than others, but it is a responsibility that we have as husbands to set the tone in our home. Someone else has referred to these little things that we're talking about now that seemingly in and of themselves are so meaningless, and yet compiled together they have significance in setting the tone and the atmosphere. Someone has referred to them as fragments of devotion. Isn't that great? Fragments of devotion. A of the expression of our devotion to our wives especially, but also to our kids. Let me ask you another question, husbands. By my actions, how would my wife list these items in order of priority in my life? Six of them. By my actions, not by what I say, not by what I try to sell verbally, not by what I try to impress other people with, my family, but by my actions, how would my wife list these six items in order of priority in my life? And the thing I'd like to have you husbands do is write these six things down. And then sometime during the week, when the two of you are off taking a walk together, ask her, honey, you know, be open. Make yourself vulnerable. Submit. Can I even use that word? Be humble. And see what she has to say. By the way I act, over a period of, say, 2 weeks to a month, as you observe me in action, what's number one in my life from your point of view? What's number two? What's number three? Now, I've got these all jumbled up. They're in no order of priority, particularly. Now, scripturally, there are some priorities. For about the first two, maybe the first three. And there's no verses that I can take you to demonstrate this. You have to kind of go by the total sweep of the New Testament. For the first one, there's probably numerous passages we could go to. And if you guys were to take a guess, what would you say from God's point of view, according to the New Testament, would be number one in God's priority list for you? Huh? Yeah, number two, right. My relationship to God. That is, from God's point of view, that's number one on His priority list for you. The continual development of your own relationship with Him. What do you think would be number two? New Testament wise. Four, right. Yeah. Those two are very clear. Probably the third one is also clear. And that's your children. But after that, the New Testament gets a little bit blurry on the other issues, and it would probably, to some extent, be determined by the situation that you find yourself in at the time, over, you know, in one particular incident or over a period of time. And so that's probably going to have to be something that you would determine. But I'd really like to have you guys take this seriously and talk this over with your wife sometime this week using that question. By my actions, how would my wife list these items in order of priority in my life? One more little thing and then I'm through. Over a period of time, we as husbands need to communicate to our wives that next to God Himself, they are number one in our thoughts. And I've said that very carefully and used the word thoughts carefully. We need to communicate in a lot of little ways to our wives that next to God Himself, they are number one in our thoughts. Now, our wives are smart enough to realize that we cannot spend as much time with them as we do spend in other things, such as our job. So I'm not talking here about time. I'm talking here about what we communicate to our wives in terms of where they stand in the pecking order of our mind. And guys, we've got to communicate. They're right up there at the top, next to God Himself. through things like this. Supper is served at 6 o'clock at your house. Standard operating procedure. We just say that. It may not be. It may be another time, but whatever time. And about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you realize you're never going to get there by 6. In fact, it's probably going to be closer to 7. What do you do? Well, as soon as you possibly can, you find a telephone and make a 20-second phone call and let her know. What does that say to her? Where was she in your thoughts? Right up at the top. If you don't call, what does it say to her? And you show up at 7. She got left out somewhere. See, it communicates an entirely different thing. It's little things like that. You're talking about buying a new chair for the living room. That's a part of your discussion. And you've gone around, you've looked, and you just can't agree on anything. Well, who gives in? Well, I'll tell you, if you're smart, you do. Because what does it say to your wife? You prefer to give in to that with her. You're more concerned about what she wants than what you want. See, that says something to her. You're trying to decide whether or not to go out to dinner. Of course, most wives, that's not even an issue, you know. Yes, we will. I'd like to. But maybe, you know, it's one of those evenings when it's kind of, you really don't know. Well, most of the time, I think we husbands would be smart enough to say, okay, let's do it. But let me toss out another little thing. This is sort of a parenthetical thought right here. How do you resolve those little things that you're trying to decide whether or not to do something or buy something? And sometimes you end up doing something or buying something that really neither one of you wanted to do or buy because you thought the other person did. But neither of you really wanted to. Ever had that happen? Oh, yeah. Our daughter and her husband came up with one that is absolutely phenomenal on this. On a scale of 1 to 10. Okay, let's go out to dinner. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10. And one of you are saying, well, yeah, I'd kind of like to go. And the other is saying, well, I'm not really sure. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, the person who kind of wants to go, on a scale of 1 to 10, how badly do you want to go? 10 being high, 1 being low. Oh, 5.5, maybe 6. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you not want to go out? The one who, I'm not sure, 3. Okay, what do? Stay home. 3 is lower than 5.5 or 6 is high. We have been using this for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years since Lynn and Tim told us about it, and man, it has solved more issues quickly, and we both know where each other are coming from. Okay, well, try that this week sometime when something like that comes up. Now, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now. In fact, I've forgotten what we're talking about right now. Where are we? Yeah, we do need a break. We're going to get it in just about 2 or 3 minutes. Okay. Number one in your thoughts. All right. Let me read you an illustration, a negative illustration of what I'm talking about. All right. Just in case you haven't gotten it yet. This is from Charlie Shedd's little book, Letters to Philip. And if you husbands have never read Charlie Shedd's little book, Letters to Philip, you ought to get a hold of it and read it. He's a very humorous writer. And you wives ought to read Letters to Karen. There are two books that he wrote, one to his son Philip and one to his daughter Karen, just before they got married. And it's just little practical tips on how to handle your mate in a good way. And he's dealing with this subject of communicating to your spouse that they are very high on your priority list in terms of their thinking about you, because he's trying to tell us that when the chips are down, our wife needs to know that we're going to be there. And boy, that is important. Let me present one of the prize illustrations of why women cut their wrists and drown themselves in bathtubs. It is also why they leave notes that read, "Dear John, I've gone away with Herbert. Goodbye." Fortunately, that didn't happen here, but some women are made of very stern stuff, and this one was. She'd come into my study looking for all the world like she had just dedicated her life to getting even. The reason that she looked that way was because she had just dedicated her life to getting even. She'd been in an automobile 5 days prior to that. We need a coffee break. She had been in an automobile accident 5 days before. She called her husband as a dutiful wife as soon as she could and told him all about it. Well, not all about it, but about it. Now, what should a husband do in that kind of a situation? Are you okay? Well, that's not what he did. Instead, he asked, how much damage did it do to the car? Query number two was, whose fault was it? You know that we all sound unsure of ourselves part of the time, and particularly when our nerves are shattered. So since her answers did not suit him, he gave her explicit instructions. Obviously one of those guys who thinks of all the angles except the right one. His third little offering was this, Jim. Listen, darling, do not admit one thing. You phone the insurance company and I'll call a lawyer. Do you understand what I mean? She understood. And to show you that even an idiot can do some things right, he added, just a minute, I'll give you the insurance man's telephone number. Thank you so much, she said. Aren't there any more questions? No, he replied. I think that about covers it. Oh, does it? She shouted. Well, just in case you're interested, I'm in the hospital with 5 broken ribs. Question. How can a man effectively say, I'm sorry, after he has pulled one like that? No way, effectively. I mean, he can say, I'm sorry, but... Of course, I suppose in his behalf, it should be noted that he knew the accident wasn't fatal. Dead wives do not make phone calls. Now, he communicated something, didn't he? All right, let me read you one other little incident. And with this, we're finished. When the new car was sideswiped on a trip to the supermarket, Mary Branson stopped and tearfully fumbled in the glove compartment for the insurance papers. Can you picture that? Just a little nick in the side of the car in the parking lot of the shopping center. She's in tears. Attached to the insurance papers, she found an envelope with her name on it in her husband's handwriting. Dear Mary, the note said, when you need these papers, remember, it's you I love, not the car. Wow. What did he communicate? Boy, that she was number one in his thoughts. Yeah. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Tremendous job we have. Tremendous responsibility. But what a tremendous adventure to make that work for us. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for these admonitions, commands that you've given us in your word. And I pray that you would give us the willingness to commit ourselves to learning how to do this through the process of the rest of our life as husbands. To communicate on a daily basis to our wives that we care, that we love them, that they're dear and precious to us. Give us the power and the strength and the ideas to know how to do this, Lord. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.